have crossed. She was a girl in a million, my friend. I should have known she would win in the end. I'm a loser, and I lost someone who's near to me. I'm a loser.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the podcast to be named later, the official podcast of OutfieldFlyRule.com. I am Brent Blackwell, here today with Chris Jervis.
Hey, hello.
Chris.
Yes?
How'd the Braves do this week?
They played.
All right. They made it to the stadium.
That's a start.
That's small victories.
They even made it to the right one. So, well, yeah, I reached a point this week where I couldn't watch too many games because I'm going to blame it on being busy with work and other things, but it just wasn't entertaining. But, it's what we expected from this. I think the team will get a little bit better results coming over the next couple of weeks just because at some point we have to stop playing every World Series favorite. I'm just hoping that will come soon. And at some point we have to stop playing Bud Norris and a couple of other folks too. Our patented A.J. Pierzynski to Eric Ibar defensive matchup also. We've got to do something about that.
Yeah, I wish I had some sort of suggestion on what to do about catcher. I don't know if there's something maybe I've said maybe a few times.
I mean, there's this idea that some people have. Tommy Poe wrote about it. You've written about it. We've mentioned it on the podcast. I just kind of think that there might be another alternative to A.J. Pierzynski available. I'm not sure.
I don't know. It'd be nice if we had a
capable backup, someone who could, I don't know, catch the ball. He doesn't even have to hit at this point because AJ doesn't hit at this point.
I mean, it'd be great if we had somebody who was, I mean, even if they were just batting like 250, maybe with a 340 on base percentage or so, you know, a great pitch framer or something. If we had that sort of catcher, I don't know, anywhere available to us.
Anywhere in the organization?
Anywhere in the organization, yeah. That'd be fantastic.
It'd be so great if he was just like four spots down on the bench. I mean, that would be nice. But alas,
I've given up hope that Tyler Flowers will get most of the plate appearances.
So yeah, that was the week in review. It was not a good week.
Not a good week.
Last night was less than stellar, as were the nights before it.
Yeah, swept by the Diamondbacks, and I've already forgotten what we did midweek.
Didn't win. There is perhaps the...
Have we won since we last talked?
I think there was a game. No, we took the Cubs to the...
No, that was on Sunday.
That's right. That was extra innings, so... I don't recall.
Yeah.
I quit paying attention sometimes. But there's always the off chance that Coppolella took Dave Stewart to lunch while they were in town.
It's true.
So we can see that hopefully play out, maybe.
Well, there were some transactions this week. So let's start with a few of these happened like literally as I was editing last week's podcast, or even maybe before that. It was just as soon as we had hit
record,
you know, stopped. Yeah, as soon as I hit the stop button,
I do remember sending you a message saying, "Hey, you may want to add a postscript to that." So
yeah,
it was very quick after.
Okay, so last week we talked about...
We won Tuesday, by the way, so we won the day after we recorded.
What was
this? 3-0 against the Mets.
Oh, that's the Matt Whistler game. Yeah, Matt Whistler looked great in his one hitter.
Yes.
That's right. I knew there was like a solitary moment of
hope.
Optimism this week. But the rest of the week it already
happened.
It had already darkened out that sun. Okay, so a week ago, the Braves, I think we talked about bringing up Matt Tuesesopo to fix the Bonifacio snafu.
Right.
We also talked about Mike
Foltynewicz.
It is easier for me when I'm not looking at his name, because every time I look at his name, it's...
You want to say all the letters.
It's Foltynewicz to me.
Foltynewicz.
But yeah, Mike Foltynewicz is... we got him coming up for John Gant. We talked about that last week. Same day, the Braves also designated Drew Stubbs for assignment, and they would release him the next day anything on Drew Stubbs that we have to say? I mean, we never expected him to be here long.
Yeah, I think that was surprising only in the sense that I think everybody kind of expected Malik Smith to go back down, if nothing else, for service time reasons. But that didn't happen. You know, he seemed to... Smith has really thrived since they put him in the number nine spot. He really has been doing very well since they moved him to number nine. I don't know if it's no pressure. I don't know if it's just because there's... With Nick Markakis behind him instead of... Nick Markakis would have been behind him if he was batting leadoff. So it's obviously... Or I say obviously. It's probably a no pressure expected from him there. But he's really been doing well since they moved him to number nine. And I think they just decided, you know what, at this point, let's see what he has.
I mean, I
would have preferred keeping Stubbs over Frank Gore, probably, but they're, at this point, I say interchangeable offensively, and Stubbs can play more outfield positions. That's basically the only reason to keep him, though.
It is not often you see a team in May release the player who is tied for second on the team in home runs and leads the team in stolen bases.
Right.
So, that's interesting. To replace Stubbs on the roster, I guess there were four players brought up that day, so I don't know if he's specifically replacing Stubbs, but we did call up Chase D'Arnaud,
who is a career middle infielder, second baseman, third baseman, shortstop, who ended up playing
right field
and nearly taking Malik Smith's head off in a near collision out there. I think that was, however, out of necessity. That was the day that Markakis had to take some time off to go visit family due to a family emergency. I still think maybe playing an actual outfielder out there might have been an option, but...
Could have had Drew Stubbs to put out there. That would have been all right. I don't know. D'Arnaud's been... He's like Stubbs. He's whatever. I'm fine.
I hear he has a band.
Yeah, apparently wouldn't shut up about that on the game yesterday.
Somebody in one of the Braves Facebook groups mentioned that they hope that Chase D'Arnaud doesn't turn out to be like Nick Swisher, because he seems like a nice guy, but they really want to hate him with all of his positivity and whatnot. And then Reed Brignac was called up as well.
Yes, Reed Brignac.
So that gives us now, I think, 24, 23 guys capable of playing utility infield.
So Brignac came up for who else? We said, and who have I not mentioned?
We demoted Jace Peterson.
Jace Peterson. Right.
Now the Jace Peterson move experiment. First off, Peterson was not very good. He played very good defense. He was solid defensively at second base. He couldn't hit. Couldn't get on base. He was a lefty in a lefty heavy lineup. But more than anything else, he was a guy who had options left. And really, at this point, it was all about roster machinations and moving people around, and you can only do that when you can send people down, and you can only send people down when they have options left, and he was one of the few that had them left. I expect he'll be back up here fairly soon.
Yeah, I think his defense is fine too, but I don't think it was enough to if it was, I mean, it's, I think he would have played
More. Yeah. He's another one of those that fans sometimes think he's better than he is because he's a likable guy. You can be a great likable guy and still be a horrible player. I mean, I would love to say I'm a likable guy who's a horrible player, but I'm not all that likable. So, yeah, Jace will be back up. I think also they wanted him to get some time at other positions. They feel he's more of a super utility guy, and he could get that playing time at those other positions without hurting the big league team.
Jace Peterson has as many caught stealings this year as he does extra base hits. That is not
right.
Entirely productive.
Then we also sent down Adonis Garcia.
Oh, yeah, that's a few days later. Let's see. I was going in order here. Okay, so those were all moves from last Monday.
Right.
So in between, when we released Drew Stubbs, we signed Sean Burnett.
Left-handed pitcher from, I believe, the Angels. Used to be fairly highly regarded. Probably lefty depth. We could probably see him. He's at Gwinnett right now. We could probably see him up this year. Maybe. He's still recovering from some injury. He was signed after an opt-out. He chose to leave the Angels because he had an opt-out clause in his contract. If he wasn't on a major league roster by X, then he could check all the other opportunities. I think he feels like he probably has. He's apparently watched the Braves and feels like he has a better chance to make the major league roster than mm-hmm. he did with the Angels.
I think so. I mean, clearly we were Erik O'Flaherty. I mean, he's still on our roster and he's right. not really doing well. So there's definitely a spot here for a lefty. Yeah, what's the
O'Flaherty
timetable?
I think he's ready. I mean, he's pitching in games. He's pitching live games. He's just pitching them in minor leagues right now. So. Talking about Burnett, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, he's pitching live games from what I understand, but I don't know what his timetable is. I think it's more effectiveness than anything else. He wasn't exactly particularly good with the Angels, if I recall.
He's in AAA, I think.
Right.
Yeah, he's at Gwinnett. Okay. Yeah, I would expect to see him up at some point, although we'll have to move him on to the 40 to do that.
O'Flaherty would be who he would replace. It's a lefty for a lefty at that point.
Yeah, because our 40 is full currently.
Yeah, I said the Angels. It was actually the Dodgers for Burnett. He actually, 7 innings, he had a 2.35 with them. He's pitched an inning at Gwinnett with nothing going on there.
Wait, no, seven innings with who?
The Dodgers AAA affiliate.
Oh, AAA.
Yeah,
okay.
Sorry. I said the Angels earlier. It was the Dodgers.
The Angels were the last major league team he played for.
Right.
2 years ago. Yeah, he's not too old. It seems like he's been around forever, but he's 33. So, I don't know.
He has a pretty good chance to. If he throws another 3 innings of effective baseball, he's going to replace Erik O'Flaherty on the 40-man, probably.
Yes. Midweek, the Braves... brought back Ender Inciarte.
Correct.
Pulled him off the DL. They gave him like a day or two in a AAA in rehab. And also, Gordon Beckham was assigned to AAA Gwinnett.
Right.
Then we did bring up Ender Inciarte and we sent Adonis Garcia to AAA, which I don't know. I thought that was a little surprising because if you're looking for players who are bad on this team, obviously there's lots of them, but it's
he's less bad than the others.
I don't know. I think I would have gone
I think
another
part
direction.
Of the move was so that he can get time in left field. I remember seeing a tweet from one of the beat writers that the primary role for him going down was so that he can play left field and learn to play left field without hurting the big league club. And let's face it, his defense is non-existent at any position he's played so far.
Yeah.
It's not like
the offense is so good either that we've got to, the offense has been pretty bad.
If his offense was better, I think they would overlook his inability to play defense. The problem is people look at what he did last year for a great 3 weeks and they think that's what he is without looking at the 4 years previous or anything that he had done after that. After his great run last year, which incidentally was only about 4 weeks during the summer. After that run, his Venezuelan League, his Winter League numbers matched his career numbers. His spring training numbers matched his career numbers. His season to date matched his career numbers. There's only one thing about him over the last 5 years, 4 years that's different, and it was that 4-week run during the middle of the summer last year.
Yeah.
And there was no reason to expect that to continue, at least in terms of power. He's always been a decent hitter, He doesn't draw walks, but he's always been a contact guy, and he doesn't strike out a lot or had not typically. But there was no reason to expect the power to come back. And I think it concerns me a little bit that some of the front office is surprised that the power never returned because there was no reason to expect it to.
Yeah. I think we missed our window on trading him for something useful.
Yep.
Unfortunately.
Especially now that beat writers are talking, they're writing gleefully about how bad he was in terms of being the worst qualified player in baseball based on WAR. That's not a good way to move a player.
Right. Wait, he's worse than Erik Ibar?
He was at one point. I don't think that's the case now.
Yeah. Or AJ Pierzynski? AJ's pretty all around bad.
Yeah. This was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we have some real contenders for real bad.
Yes, we do.
Daniel Castro, been pretty bad so far.
Another one. People seem to like him, but he's not that good defense, not a good hitter. Now, at this point, I think it's probably worth playing Castro over Ibar just because Ibar's not helping his cause in any way, shape, or form.
See, I would go the other way. I would play Ibar just to, I mean, because
Ibar's starting to wake up with the bat. And if we can get him to anything marketable in any way, shape, or form and get something for him, I would love to do that.
Right. I don't think there's a realistic scenario where Castro turns into a 270 hitter and we trade him for something useful. But I think there is a possible scenario where Ibar does that.
Right.
So I would play Ibar.
His defense is killing us, though. Yeah. And that's something that... Yeah, Eric Ibar is currently the second worst player in baseball by WAR.
F4?
F4,
Fangraphs WAR. Yeah, I don't know.
Prince Fielder is the only player worse. That gives you an idea. Oof. Although Adonis Garcia, having been out of the game for a week now, is still the seventh worst player. So, yeah, that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're not all negative here.
No.
But, you know, we'll... there's one player doing pretty well. Julio Teheran's had a pretty good start to his season. I'd say, yeah, it's a better start than he had last year. And he's kind of pitching...
back to Teheran levels.
Yeah, he's back to good old Julio. And
there was some talk yesterday, I think, on Major League Baseball Trade Rumors had a piece about teams inquiring about Teheran. A lot of scouts and front office people and observers think that Teheran will be moved before the trade deadline. If that's the case, it's because he's pitching well. If we moved him last season, it would have been selling low on him. I think we're back to selling at least at his market value.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to sell high on him. Maybe he goes on a good run of 3 or 4 starts with, you know, an ERA of 1.5 over that period of time.
Right.
And we can kind of sell high on him. If we sell, I still think that he's a very valuable piece, just given his contract. Contract, people just don't understand what a regular starting pitcher in Major League Baseball commands as far as a contract. And his contract maxes out at $12 million in his option year in 2020. That's great. I mean, we're paying him $8-10 million a year over the next few years.
It's just a huge bargain, and I think maybe you trade him but you make sure you get something back that's really good,
because it's the contract that's carrying the value just as much as his ability.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if somebody were to go out onto the free agent market and try and get a pitcher that is doing what Teheran's done over the last 4 years, they're going to be paying $15-18 million a year for that. 18 might be on the high side, but they're going to be paying $15 million a year for that. And his contract maxes out at 12 in its final year.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot of good to be had from that. Oh, a couple of teams that were linked to Teheran were the Cubs, for some reason. I don't know why the Cubs need pitching. And I think the White Sox were one that was said to have some interest.
Oh, the White Sox would be a terrible fit for him. He's a fly ball pitcher.
I know this.
A team, you know who should go get him
is Kansas City Royals
or the Padres or somebody who play in a ballpark that doesn't punish fly balls.
Right. Well, that's how the Royals are designed. The Royals were specifically created because of their huge outfield. That's why they went and got the Kevin Dysons and the Lorenzo Cain's and the guys who could cover all of that ground.
Jared Dyson. Kevin Dyson is football player, I think, right?
Yeah, that's right, for the Tennessee Titans, I think.
Yeah.
Well, him too. He could probably cover it.
He would.
Sounded wrong when I said it.
Yeah, he would be very helpful. Kansas City would be a great spot for Julio, and they're a little frustrated. I think Chris Medlin's doing pretty bad this year.
Yes, he is.
So they're a team that would be interested, or should be interested. I don't know what we could get in return, but
I don't know what they have. If it's the Cubs for some reason, if they are looking at him, then I think any conversation with the Cubs should start with Wilson Contreras, their AAA catcher.
I think the Cubs should be interested because the Cubs have so much money tied up in big contracts,
right,
that
getting a cheap one would be nice.
Yes, it would offset a little bit of the Hayward money. It would offset a little bit of the John Lester money if they had a Teheran. Because, you know, if you're paying Lester $25 million, I don't know what they're paying him exactly, but if they're paying Lester $25 million, you know, Lester by himself for 25 seems like a lot. But if you can have Lester and Tehran
for
$33 million, every team in baseball takes that package.
Yep, no doubt.
So, you know, if you have a guy like Julio Tehran, it lets you justify paying bigger money to someone else,
right,
in a way.
The Braves had talks during the offseason, reportedly, with the Cubs, but also with the Giants, looking to put something together. I don't know. I haven't looked at the Giants' prospects recently to know what all they have, but I think Wilson Contreras is a good fit. A lot of Braves fans want either Javier Baez, or Jorge Soler from the Cubs. I'm not particularly sold on Soler. He's actually having a horrible season. Baez, Tehran's not going to get you Baez, I don't believe. Well, it'll have to be a package deal. Apparently, the Cubs have shown some interest in Nick Markakis as well. So, there could be a package deal. There could be multiple deals coming. There could be nothing that comes from it. You know, this is one of those things that people have to write things sometimes. And, you know, rehashing old stories is a good way to get good way to get clicks and links.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so Tehran's not the only player doing pretty well. There are some other pitchers who've had some bright spots.
We have a young reliever doing very well. I don't know if he's young.
Yeah.
Hunter Cervenka is having a great start to his major league career.
Yes, he is. He has pitched 9 1/3 innings over 14 games. He has given up one hit in his big league career. And he has something like 12 strikeouts, I believe.
Hunter Cervenka holds the Atlanta Braves franchise record for consecutive scoreless outings to start a major league career. Has 14, I believe, consecutive scoreless outings to start his major league career. And this is a guy who 10 months ago was pitching for the Sugar Land Skeeters in the Independent Texas Baseball League. So he has worked to really get himself back into the game. Went to the Cubs. The Cubs released him out of Iowa when he was with their AAA affiliate. We picked him up. We gave him a chance in spring. He did well, but we sent him down for some more work, and then we called him back up later on because he was still getting the job done. I know you had taken a look at some of his pitch profiles and whatnot, and I think on his pitch location.
The pitch location heat map was hilarious to look at. It's clearly the heat map of a lefty who mostly faces lefties, because on the heat map, if you can visualize it, and this is a terrible thing to do on a podcast, but whatever, but it's from the catcher's perspective, and it's a grid of, I don't know, sometimes it's 9 boxes, sometimes it's, more.
Just imagine you're the catcher sitting there looking at the pitcher.
Right.
With a lefty batter up.
So, if pitches are not thrown often to a certain location, it'll be blue. And if pitches are frequently thrown to a certain location, it will be red. Hunter Cervenka's heat map is all the boxes are blue, except for one.
It's bottom left quadrant.
Yeah, it's the bottom left corner of the map is just bright red. And he's clearly just throwing sliders to lefty hitters over and over and over again, which would explain why he's only given up one hit. And it would explain why he's walked 6 batters in 9 innings, because he's not throwing pitches in the zone. He's throwing pitches out of the zone, and batters are either swinging at them and not getting hits or striking out, or they're not swinging at them and they walk. So, you know, as long as they keep swinging at them,
he's being effective.
Keep doing it. Yeah.
Do it till it don't work.
Right. So it's pretty interesting. I think
that's a diamond in the rough. Yeah. I think we've stumbled across here. I mean, this is what we did with Eric O'Flaherty back in 2008, 2009. Mm-hmm. We picked him up off the scrap heap of Seattle. And as long as we don't run him out there every single day like we did, run Cervenka out there every single day like we did O'Flaherty, then we might have a nice little piece in the bullpen. And the bullpen kind of seems like it's starting to take shape a little bit. You know, Cervenka has his role. Vizcaino struggled a little bit last night, but I do like that Freddie's not afraid to use Vizcaino in high leverage situations. But yeah, Cervenka's having a pretty good start to the year.
Yeah, it's something to keep an eye on. It's a nice, something nice to talk about, at least. He also had some good starts this week from a few guys yesterday.
Yeah, Sunday. That was nice.
Folty had a very nice outing against the Diamondbacks. He was getting some nice called strikes on two right-handed batters on the outside corner.
Right.
Maybe, I guess his slider is what he was throwing.
He had good control yesterday, which is something he has not exhibited at any point, really, throughout the season at any level. And he had good control. He wasn't getting too much of the strike zone, but he was also not missing it enough that he was walking batters all the time. So he had a really, really strong start, and it was, unfortunately...
He's only walked in 10 and two-thirds innings this year. He's only walked one guy accidentally.
Right. Well, it's early, and it's weird, though. In the minor leagues, his problem is walking people.
Mm-hmm.
And up here in the majors, his problem is getting too much of the plate and giving up big hits.
Home runs, yeah.
And it's almost like he's trying so hard in his head not to walk somebody. Or he's using his secondary pitches in the minors, working on his secondary pitches. That's probably what it is.
Yeah, I could see it being that. Yeah.
But yeah, 7 innings pitch, 5 hits, 2 runs. No walks, 8 strikeouts. Gave up 1 home run, 101 pitches. Pretty good outing from him yesterday. And I don't know. I'm not going to say that there's any type of, what is it, causation equals correlation. But A.J. Pierzynski was not the starting catcher yesterday.
So, oh, I mean, in that case, I definitely think it's causation.
So, I...
especially those, I was just saying, those strikes, he was getting some calls that I think maybe were balls. He was getting right. called strikes.
Oh, there was a couple. There was one at-bat against Goldschmidt where he got a called strike 3 that was 2.5 inches off the plate, according to Pitch Effects. 3 inches off the plate, something like that, according to Pitch Effects, and we got the call on it.
He only gave up 2 batted balls that were line drives yesterday.
Nice.
That's very encouraging that people weren't...
I've been harsh on Foltynewicz this year in terms of his walks and whatnot, but it was a very encouraging start, and one that he probably needed just for his own confidence.
Yes. If you could have let me pick one pitcher in the system to have a great, great start, I would have picked Folty because he's the one who
he's got major league stuff at least with. He's got one very well above average pitch and one average pitch. It's his third and fourth pitch that gives him problems, and if he can get even one of those developed to even average, then I think he's got a career as a starter.
Oh yeah, I think so. It's definitely too early to give up on him, though.
Oh, yeah, he's only had seven. I think yesterday was his 17th or 18th career start in the majors. I mean, it's way too early to give up on him. But at the same time, he's got to start showing a little bit of progression. I mean, he's at, 25 years old now, I believe? He's at a point where it's time to start showing what you have.
Yeah. So.
Because the team can't wait on him. The team has to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, we also had a brilliant start from Matt Whistler this week.
Yeah, this was my pick to break out this year. And he's looking really good so far. It's one of those things where you can't just point at one particular thing. It's the whole package of everything he's doing. And he looks good doing it.
Is that the best start of the season, you think, for a Braves pitcher?
Probably.
Maybe Chacin had one early that was...
Yeah, Chacin did have one. I don't know the... Yeah, Chacin had one earlier. I was just thinking about the Foltynewicz start, though. That might have been... I mean... and that's actually not the best start by Whistler this year, I don't believe, was it? Yeah, that one was the 8-inning one. The 5-3 one was the 8... the May 3rd start was 8 innings.
Yeah, 8 innings, 1 hit, 2 walks.
He had a good start earlier in the year, but that's...
He had a good start against the Dodgers on that Thursday afternoon game.
Yep. Yeah, 1 run, it was unearned. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
6 strikeouts. He's starting to come together, 3.24 ERA. Peripherals are show a little bit of differential, but I think that's primarily because he's not a big strikeout pitcher. He's striking out 6.21 per 9 innings, which is not awful, but it's not great, not very good. but he's getting weak contact.
It's definitely below average now nowadays. Yeah. I mean, the strikeouts were, that would have been a little below average 5 years ago, but now it's well below average because everybody is striking out a ton.
He's not giving up a lot of hits. He's giving up 21 hits in 33 innings. You know, 9 walks. He's controlling base runners, and that's what it boils down to. You know, whether that's a function of him, we can pretty much say it's not the great defense behind him because, well, we don't have great defense behind him.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's just limiting his damage. He's limiting his base runners, and that's a good thing to do. Home run ratio is good. I mean, average home run. Oh, league low BABIP.
That's it. That's what I was going to talk about, right? So, yeah, Matt Whistler has he has the lowest BABIP allowed in baseball, and BABIP is batting average on balls in play, which is just it's batting average except it doesn't account for home runs.
Strikeouts, walks, or home runs. Because there's no – basically just a ball that you put into the playing field.
Right. Which is there's some luck involved. It's a great deal of luck, but there is also some skill in limiting BABIP. So – Whistler's is the lowest among major league pitchers so far this season, which suggests that maybe his luck could run out at some point. He may be getting too lucky. But, I don't know, he may also be inducing a lot of weak contact.
I did look
it up just out of curiosity. Matt Whistler is 15th in baseball in highest percentage of batted balls that are classified as soft contact by... I don't know who does
the baseball class. Info solutions.
Okay, yeah, people who just mark every they watch the games and they mark the ball.
Well, they take soft it the way medium. It works. Matter of fact, Joe Simpson was talking about this in a broadcast the other night. How he didn't understand how they classified it as soft hit, hard hit, or medium hit, and basically it started back about 2002. Major League Baseball, in preparation for StatCast and some of these other things, started installing cameras and sensors in all of the stadiums. And they take, based on the trajectory of the hit, based on where the ball landed, flight time, all kinds of different things that they can gather from these cameras and sensors, and they calculate the miles per hour, the exit velocity of the ball off the bat. And something that is classified as soft hit is 95 miles an hour or less. If it's between 95 and 105, it's classified as hard hit. And if it's over 105 miles per hour off the bat, then it's classified as hard hit. I think I said hard before, it's medium. 95 to 105 is medium.
Yeah.
And then hard hit is 105 plus. And the idea is that the harder you hit the ball, the less likely it is that the players can make the play on it because it squirts through the hole faster or that line drive screams past you faster. And you see that a lot. The trajectory helps more with the home runs, but even a hard hit ground ball can get through the infield much quicker.
Right. Whistler also, he's also 15th in the majors this year in percentage of batted balls that are going to the opposite field. 32% of batted balls against him.
That's actually pretty good. That kind of indicates that he is giving up some weak contact because
he's keeping guys off balance.
He is. And balls hit to the opposite field are far more often classified as soft hit or medium hit than they are as hard. Very few guys have the ability to hit the ball with authority to the opposite field. That doesn't mean they can't do it, and it doesn't mean necessarily... Usually when you see the ball smoke to the opposite field, it's a guy that just missed a home run. A lot of times the opposite field hits are more the dinks, dunks, and pokes.
And the names ahead of him on the list, too, are names that you... I don't know, you can see reasons for that. You've got a few guys who are doing, like, just great, like... I think Taijuan Walker from the Mariners is doing really well this year. Somebody like Matt Harvey is on the list ahead of him. Carlos Martinez of the Cardinals. Vince Velasquez of the Phillies. And then there are a few others who are just... R.A. Dickey is number one in opposite field rate because everybody is just waiting on the knuckleball.
Right.
And it's a strange pitch. Alex Wood is up there. Anyway, it's some good pitchers. It doesn't automatically mean success for Whistler, but it is... It is another sign that he is keeping guys off balance and that league low 183 batting average on balls in play. And I forgot to say this earlier about BABIP. League average is around 300 or so. And Whistler is allowing a 183 batting average this year on balls in play. So
we should expect to see that come up.
Yeah.
The question is how much, and will it be drastically so? But with what he's doing, and this is where when we talk about Babbitt, that just kind of gives you a, okay, something's going on here. Let's look at what's going on. And yep. when we look at the giving up hits to the opposite field and we look at the weak contact, we can see...
It's not that, purely luck.
Right, exactly. And that's something that, you know, we use the word luck sometimes when talking about Babbitt, and maybe that's not the right word. Maybe random variance is a better synonym to use there.
Yeah.
But, you know, Babbitt takes into account those things like hitting a rock in the infield and, you know, those things that you just cannot classify, but you know they happen.
Yeah, so Whistler... Whistler's looking good. Whistler's looking good. Ender Inciarte, as you mentioned, is back now.
I like that. The question good. On Inciarte, I guess over the last few days, is does he play center? Does he play left? Does he play right? I personally think he played the best center fielder in center field. I think Malik Smith is very well suited for left field. It could be that they're playing him in center and Ender in left just because Inciarte has experience in left field and Smith has not played left field with any regularity, and then the last time he did play it was a couple of years ago. I think if you can play center field, you can play left field. And his arm is probably better suited for left field anyway, Smith's arm. But that being said, Smith has played a pretty solid center field since he's been up here. He's tied for the lead league among outfielders in defensive runs saved so far. His UZR per 150 is very high, although that's an extremely small sample size. He hasn't played poorly in the outfield yet. He's taken some bad routes, but he's been able to make it up with his speed. He's doing all right. So
I think he's been very good, but yeah. You know, I just
think very good for a short period of time doesn't offset great for a longer period of time.
Right. No, also Inciarte is going to have a better arm too, and you play your better arm in center,
right,
as opposed to left.
Right.
And so, you don't necessarily have to... I mean, there's some notion that you start off just... You take your best outfield arm and you put that guy in right. But I don't think... I mean, arm is great, but it's not as important as range.
Right.
You start off... You classify your outfielders by range, really. And that you start off with who has the best range, they're in center field.
And then whoever has the best arm of the remaining guys should be
in right. Yes. That's how you put together an outfield. And I think... I mean... It's a good problem to have.
Oh yeah,
we're going to have a great left fielder as long as we don't put Malik Smith in right field. I don't really see a huge issue. Well, I mean, also Markakis he doesn't need to be in left or center. I don't think.
Right.
I don't think he has the range.
If we could get one more solid defensive outfielder, I would be happy.
Yeah,
Markakis.
I don't think he's bad.
No, Markakis makes the plays he's supposed to make. I think he's one of those guys who grades better than some of the defensive metrics right now.
Mm-hmm.
Give him credit for. I don't think he's got... We were spoiled with Jason Hayward.
Yeah.
And I think Jason Hayward kind of gave a little bit of a false sense of what a right fielder's supposed to be sometimes because he was a center fielder playing right field, essentially. Now, I didn't like him playing center field because I thought it was too much wear and tear on his big old body running all over the place.
Yeah.
But apparently the Cubs and their large checkbook think differently than me, and he's done well out there in the small times, you know, in the small sample size he's played.
He's playing right, isn't he?
Well, he's gone back before. He's played at center a couple of times this year, I think.
Yeah, I thought
but they Fowler. Signed him. Well, they signed him to be their center fielder, right. And then they brought Dexter Fowler back.
Right.
And I think he's played out there a little bit, but I think it's been more in... I might be wrong on that. Wouldn't be the first time I'm wrong on anything. But, you know, he gave a different idea, I think, of what a right fielder is supposed to be when he was here. And I was one of the first to say that Nick Markakis, his defense is not as good as the Gold Glove that he won.
Oh no, but he's not a defensive star, but he's a guy who's just he doesn't make mistakes.
Hayward's played 3 games at center this year, so
okay,
yeah. I mean, he's not playing center regularly, but he's looked good while he's out there. Markakis has the big thing about him is he doesn't take bad reads. He doesn't take bad angles. He's very efficient in what he does. And this is where StatCast would help. Because StatCast, prior to...
Oh, yeah. It had the route efficiency.
Mm-hmm. And I think he takes very efficient routes.
I would call him almost like robotic in a good way.
Right.
Like, he, it's just... he's limited in what he can do, but he does what he can do very, very well.
Right. So, I you know, it's a good problem to have. Markakis may not last the season with the Braves. We'll see. I hope if the Braves do get another fielder, another outfielder, that it's somebody who's probably, I mean, we obviously need a bat. But it would be nice if they could play some decent defense to go with it. I don't want to be putting a Mark Trumbo type player out in the outfield. Mm-hmm. Although with Ender Inciarte and Malik Smith both out there, you can kind of cheat a little bit. It was the Jeff Francoeur syndrome from 2007. You know, when you had Andrew Jones in center field, you can kind of do what you want on either corner.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Anything else? We're expecting maybe in the week ahead that Bud Norris, maybe something happened with him. Or has he pitched out of the bullpen?
Yes, and he did not do it well.
I don't know. I still almost want to give him another shot, give him a few more shots at that.
If Bud Norris does go, I would imagine we would see maybe Casey Kelly come up as kind of a swingman, spot starter, long relief. You know, I don't know. I haven't seen anything announced, although there was some speculation, I think, from David O'Brien, that maybe there would be another starting pitcher called up this week. And if that's the case, I would imagine it would be, if they're looking for a starter, I don't know where they would put him. Teron's going to be here. Well, we think Teron's going to be here. Whistler's here. You know, Fulte's here.
Norris hasn't, I don't think he's done that bad. He's pitched, he's had 3 games in relief, and he's gone 5 innings, giving up 2 hits and a run in relief so far. He has walked 4, but 3 strikeouts. I don't know. Two of his appearances were multi-inning scoreless appearances. So that's, I don't know, something to work with. I'd leave him in the bullpen only because with this team, you're probably going to have a lot of games where it's 7-1 early.
You
need somebody to just bite that bullet.
I'm not I was wrong about Norris, so the quicker we can get rid of him, the quicker I'm reminded how, I can forget how wrong I was. When I say I was wrong, I thought he would be an innings eater, and we didn't really care what kind of innings we got from him, but he's to the point where the innings he gives us.
He made us care.
Yeah, he made us care. And for us to really care that much about innings on this team, you had to not pitch well. So, whatever.
leave him out there.
Although in his last 3, I mean, he's pitched 3 games in relief, and in those 3 games he's gone 2.1 or 2 1/3, 2 1/3 in 1 inning. So he's given his innings out of the bullpen.
Not 5 innings. It's 5 2/3.
Right. So he's given us innings out of the bullpen, and they appear to be.
He's a 1.59 ERA out of the pen this year.
Maybe that's the best fit for him.
A 1.18 batting average allowed.
Again, small sample size.
Yeah. Still, it's the sample that is slightly working right now. So,
true.
So don't cut him loose. Hopefully,
we also expect to see Gordon Beckham called up this week. Matter of fact, it's already been announced Beckham will be activated tomorrow.
Who's going down?
Matt Tuiasosopo is going to go down.
Oh.
And that kind of brings up another question. So they were going to call up Emilio Bonifacio, and they screwed that up.
But they can now, right?
They can. So is he going to come up, or is he not? Did they actually watch game film over the last few days?
We got so burned on that accident that we're just like, we don't want to remind anybody of it. It's the painful reminder of that.
It's not bad enough that I don't know. But we'll see. Bonifacio could come up. I still think there's going to be some moves happening because I don't see Reed Brignac or Chase d'Arnaud being, extended options with this team. I don't see Bonifacio being one either. The thing is we really don't have a lot of young position players we can call up. Albies probably isn't ready.
Our team is old.
It is.
The 25-man roster is. We were talking about this before we hit play or before we hit record, but the entire bench is at least 29 years old. Chase d'Arnaud is 29. Tyler Flowers is 30. Kelly Johnson's 34. Jeff Francoeur is 32. Tuiasosopo is 30. Reed Brignac is 30. AJ Pierzynski is 39, going on 73.
We had a lot of Braves fans saying, we shouldn't trade that guy because we need some veteran leadership for these young guys. we don't have any young guys.
We got too much veteran leadership.
Right.
Alexio Gondo, 33, or 32. Erica Flaherty, 31.
Jason Grilley.
Erica Flaherty's only 31? Wow. We really just messed him up a few years ago. Bud Norris, 31. Jason Grilley, 39. Jim Johnson, 32. Gordon Beckham getting ready to come back, 29. Dude, this is not a young major league roster. So, you know, I know that's an excuse some people will make.
It's more like we have baby boom Braves right now.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's, yeah, you know, when a team's bad, you'll just hear some people say, eh, they're young, but.
I think we overstated, you know, Hart and Coppolella last year said, this won't happen again, we're not going to let this happen. I think they overstated. Let's premise this by saying there are things that they can say in public and there are things they can't say in public.
Oh, right.
And when they say, oh, this is going to be better, this is going to be better, I think some of that was them knowing that the team was going to be bad. They probably even thought it had a chance to be worse given the players they had a good idea they were going to bring in. But they can't go out and say that.
Right.
That said, they may have overstated some of the contributions from what they expected from these veterans. I think they saw A.J. Pierzynski last year, and they thought maybe that, okay, if we can catch that one more time. And there was no reason to think that. You know, there was no reason to think Adonis Garcia was going to hit the home runs that he did. There was no reason to think that some of these... in retrospect, there was probably no reason to think that Bud Norris would be anything more than what he's been. I think they overstated contributions from some of the one-year veterans, which then kind of limits their ability to flip those veterans for any type of anything at the deadline. So that kind of ties our hands now where we're either having to DFA them and bring up guys, and we're not getting anything for the guys that we had brought in expecting to flip.
Speaking of guys we were maybe thinking of flipping, Eric Ibar is obviously not having a good season. Do you know who has the higher WAR right now, according to Baseball Prospectus, Eric Ibar or Andrelton Simmons?
I would say Simmons, just based on defense driving it. But you're basing it on BREF.
No, Baseball Prospectus.
Oh, Baseball Prospectus. I don't know how they rank there, so I would say Ibar.
It's Ibar negative 0.5. Simmons is negative 0.7.
Simmons is going to be there for a while. I think he went out with a bad wrist last night. Made a diving stop on a Pedroia grounder and jammed his wrist or messed up his wrist pretty good.
Yeah, he's been bad this year. He's been really bad. Even his defense has apparently not been...
His defense has still been solid looking from just from what I've seen, but I don't get to watch their games as
I'm interested to see what his Fangraphs defense is this year. Because B-Pro has him in the red. But even Fangraphs, who are very high on his defense, their metrics are very high on his defense, they've got him at zero WAR for the season.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Well, his bat has been terrible.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, when you're watching Eric Ibar not do well, don't be that upset about the trade, because the player we got rid of is not doing any better. And
we also picked up other pieces with
him. We got a top prospect and a secondary prospect that's having a good year.
I will say this, Simmons' defense, even if it's down for Simmons, is probably still better than Ibar's.
Oh, yeah.
And that would help this team this year with the confidence of some of the young pitchers. But, you know, it's not going to take us. All that would do is take us from a 65-win team to a 66-win team, I think. So
yeah,
it's not going to make any difference now. We'll see how it does when the Sean Newcomb Sean Newcomb starts showing what he can do. That'll probably help us down the road more than keeping Simmons would have.
Right now,
I miss watching him play shortstop.
Yeah, right now, if I gave you a over under 99.5 losses for this team this year.
I had taken the under earlier in the year.
Yeah, you and TJ both were taking the under throughout April, so I wonder what we would do right now. The team is 7-23. So to lose 99, we would have to lose only 76 more games.
I don't know.
We'd have to go 56-76. We could be 20 games under 500 for the rest of the season and not lose 100 games.
I don't know. Earlier in the season, I would have said no, but now I think it's a possibility. We just don't have, beyond Freeman, Markakis, Inciarte, and Inciarte is kind of a wash because he played three games before getting hurt. We don't have major league quality players.
Mm-hmm. So you lean in towards the over?
I am now. I wasn't earlier.
Yeah. I mean, you just, that's such a bad start to
shake. It's hard to overcome that. Yeah. Yeah.
So I would too, but maybe just a hair. I might say, I don't know, Baseball Prospectus has us right now at 100. Like, they've got us going 55-77 over the rest of the season. That's their projected.
A lot of it depends on what happens around mid-June, July.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just thought it's a fun question.
It's not, No, it's not.
Not a fun question.
It is not a fun question.
I was trying to make it a fun question. All right, week ahead. Real quick, we've got Braves. Braves are scheduled for some games this week. How exciting. They're off today. Then they got three against the Phillies, three against the Royals. At home against the Phillies. Matt Whistler against, I don't know this guy, A. Morgan. Who is A. Morgan? I don't know who that is. Wednesday, Chacin scheduled to pitch against Jared Eichhoff. And Thursday, Aaron Blair against Vince Velasquez.
That's going to be a good matchup.
Yeah, I like that Thursday matchup. And then you've got the weekend series is at Kansas City. So Julio Teheran will be facing Edinson Volquez on Friday. Mike Foltynewicz will be facing Chris Young on Saturday. And then Matt Whistler against Chris Medlin on Sunday.
I like our chances on Sunday.
Yeah, that's right. So this is going to be the weekly segment where it's like, pick the win. Which game will be the win this week?
Oh, me.
I don't know. I'm going to say we take two from the Phillies and one from the Royals. And it will be either, I don't know. We got, I'm feeling crazy. I think we can go 4-2 this week.
Nice.
In some way, shape, or form.
So we have, I could, 4-2 is possible with the pitchers we have going this week and the teams we're facing.
Inciarte's back. All right. Well, I think that's it. Thanks for listening.
We'll start, I think next week we're going to start previewing the draft.
Mm-hmm.
The MLB draft is coming up in June, and we've been looking. Everybody's starting to put out their mock drafts and this and that and the other. I don't know that we're going to do a mock draft so much as here's some guys that the Braves should kind of keep an eye on, where we think they might go, where we think they should go. And as usual, we'll probably be wrong on it, just like we are on everything else. But we're going to start taking a look. And then after that, we're going to take a look at some of the international signing guys. I've been looking at some of those, and I think we have some really exciting opportunities coming up in the international draft this year.
Mm-hmm.
I just hope and pray that we move away from some of the hitter profiles that we have in the organization right now, that we move towards maybe a little bit more balance, like a Dansby Swanson, and move away from the slap hitting speedster guys.
Right.
At some point, we have to be able to get these guys. It doesn't do any good to get them on base and leave them there. We have to get them around the bases.
Yeah. All right. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or whatever other podcasting app you use. You can read us at outfieldflyrule.com, like us on Facebook. Join the Facebook group, which is different. Anything else?
Tweet us at OFR Sports. Mm-hmm. You can even email us old school, outfieldflyrule@gmail.com.
I think that's it. All right, thanks for listening, guys. Go Braves.
Have a good one.
Going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come. Going to Kansas City. Crazy little